if I were to put it into words, what African fashion means to me is a tactile material space of multiplicity. It plays by its own rules and seeks affirmation and validation from absolutely nobody, because it knows so deeply of the wells of imagination and history and storytelling from which it's been woven. I do think, though, if we're going to get into the nuances of it, we need to be specific about where we mean when we say African fashion, because although it can all be encompassed under the space of multiplicity, we also know that the specific histories and stories and wells of imagination that weave it are so different and diverse, right? So to do justice to all of them or any of them, we'd have to be specific.
For me specifically, coming from Korea, but then also going to kind of Western institutions my whole life, only being taught by white teachers, white Americans, white South Africans, I also worry sometimes, from a person who hasn't lived in Korea, that I sometimes look at my own culture through the lens of whiteness, and perhaps that I stagnate my own culture and kind of looking back is always great. And you know, this timeline thing, time is a construct and it all exists at the same time, but yeah, how much of it goes under the danger if not being intentional of being stagnant, and also perhaps like I end up essentializing my own culture.
Africa has no fashion. The same way Africa has no monuments, no written language, no medicine, and no technology. Africa has no fashion because it has no clothes, no fabrics, no crafts, no makers. So riddle me this. Where was clothing invented? Okay, perhaps that's a tough one. Perhaps let's start with why clothing was invented. There's the obvious stuff, right? We need protection from the elements, heat, cold, or rain. But those aren't the only reasons we get dressed, though. Clothing serves a host of social functions for us. It reveals jobs and roles. It indicates gender, age, marital status. It tells us who to listen to or who to avoid. But there's still more. Take jewelry, for example. Jewelry literally serves no functional purpose. It doesn't protect us from any elements. It's just this very ornate, purely decorative thing. And yet it's so important for so many of us in how we function, from wedding rings to rosaries. And what's truly powerful about clothing is that it's also the one thing we all have in common. No matter where you live, the language you speak, how you look, or what you believe, we all get dressed. It's a practice completely unique to us as a species. And if clothing is such an essential part of what makes humans humans, you can then understand my frustration at the idea that Africa has no fashion, because that's essentially another way in which our colonizers, or the powers that be, are denying our humanity. Recently, I had the opportunity to speak to the fashion designer and textile artist Bubu Ogisi, who told me that when she was in fashion school in Paris, she was told there are no fabrics in Africa. And it's so funny because everyone I've shared that with cannot believe the absolute absurdity and caucasity of that statement. Yet, it makes sense in an unfortunate way. I want you to imagine Southern Africa for a moment. Let's say the year is 1400. When you think of people crossing the Kalahari or chilling in the Drakensberg, what are they wearing? Now, don't feel bad if you're just picturing naked bushmen or people in loincloths or something from a Tarzan movie. That's kind of part of my point. And say perhaps you're able to picture a lot more than that, like ornate headdresses made from feathers and furs, or meticulously cut beads from ostrich eggshells and wood, or even tanned leather perfectly sculpted to a calf or a bicep. Then I want you to think about what each of these items meant. What did they tell us about the people wearing them? How did their economies function? What were the resources accessible to them, or what did they acquire through trade? Who made these things? How were these roles decided? Did it take decades to learn, or was it a position to earn? Did these people wear them with great pride? What message or image were they trying to convey? This would have been their second skin, in which they walked and hunted, danced and cried, made love, fought battles, experienced every high and low of life just like we do. We'll never get to know the people before us on a personal level. Yes, we can read books and look at cave paintings and admire monuments, but what really compares to the physical reality and practicality of clothing? The act of getting dressed, one of the remaining things we still have in common with them. What does it mean in our understanding of ourselves, our ancestors, and our history when we don't have a grasp on something as intimate and as personal as this? How do we even think to move forward if we can never look back? My name is Kensani, and this is Clothes Minded, a podcast about human connection.
I think if I were to put it into words, what African fashion means to me is a tactile material space of multiplicity. It plays by its own rules and seeks affirmation and validation from absolutely nobody because it knows so deeply of the wells of imagination and history and storytelling from which it's been woven. I do think, though, if we're going to get into the nuances of it, we need to be specific about where we mean when we say African fashion, because although it can all be encompassed under the space of multiplicity, we also know that the specific histories and stories and wells of imagination that weave it are so different and diverse, right? So to do justice to all of them or any of them, we'd have to be specific.
I stand to be corrected, but there are no fashion museums in Southern Africa. There are no large hallowed halls entirely devoted to dress. And I mean, I know museums are a difficult space for Black people, particularly in South Africa, where I live, shout out Joburg. These spaces are often incredibly inaccessible, either through location, language, or even how so many of them are falling apart due to a lack of funding and resources. But even for the ones that do exist, you can't escape the reasons why so many of them were built. Big structures where settlers displayed the spoils of their conquests, where they remind us of the slaughter, theft, and dehumanization that still challenge us today. But since there are no fashion museums, with whatever complex feelings they might inspire in us, where do we look to for this information? Sure, there are sections dedicated to dress and material culture in our current museums, but again, a lot of the good stuff, or at least the stuff I care about, is often collecting dust in a storeroom somewhere, or only accessible if you have a PhD or something. So where do you learn about local fashion history? As a two-time dropout, I can tell you it's also not at fashion school, where the curriculum favors Western modes and learnings. And I love hoop skirts and bustles as much as the next nerd, but my friends, this isn't exactly England. Which is ironic considering you'll probably find more pre-colonial African artifacts in the museums there. I only suggest browsing the British Museum Digital Archives for Southern African artifacts if you're ever in the mood to feel white hot rage. There's a plethora of aprons, beads, headdresses, tunics just laying there, a lot of them just with the single sentence of Southern Africa, circa a long time ago, who cares? I mean, I get that when you've pillaged and stolen a bunch of stuff, you don't really care about the exact intricacies that make something Ndebele or Pondo. After all, it's all just folk dress or traditional costume. It's not fashion. You have to understand there's a distinct difference between fashion and dress. And by dress, I don't mean the garment, but more the general term for clothing. What separates fashion from dress is our human desire for newness. We understand fashion as a product of innovation and the progression of time, so that traditional clothing, even for white people sometimes, is stationary, suspended in animation at one unknown time and place. Western clothing, on the other hand, can be decorative and have changing trends and exist in every space. But our own products, our own makings, even amongst ourselves, are designated to weddings and festivals or special ceremonies, and they're always seen in just one way. And that's obviously done on purpose because it justifies the need for colonialism, for invaders. It gives proof to the idea of dark continents and empty land because nothing there moves or develops until a white knight has to swoop in and educate the natives.
African fashion means a possibility and a potential unlike anywhere else. I really think there is a spirit and an understanding of style and design that is so, so deep and kind of inarticulable. So to be a witness to that is, yeah, it's incredible.
I want to start by saying that I don't really like the term African fashion. And I think that you may say that I'm being sensitive. Maybe you're right when you term fashion as being African fashion,
you're essentially othering it and demarcating it from essentially Western fashion. And I think you see that in the designs. It's meant to be very different from Western fashion. It's supposed to be about color and prints and really bold silhouettes and cuts and about craft. And while that is a sense of African fashion, but it's also of what part of Africa, you know, like. I think that's my other issue with the term African fashion, is that it conflates African cultures. It kind of makes it clear that it's for a white gaze, or a white Western gaze, essentially. African fashion is not made for Africans. It's made for the West, and the way that it exists. And I think you see that especially with the brands that are celebrated abroad, is that they are all kind of celebrating this idea of an African culture that is created by the West. And it's very singular, which is absolutely not what African culture or African fashion should be or is. It's very diverse, it's complex, it's rich, and there's so much to it that we just kind of forget and ignore, because it's too much, it's too complicated to acknowledge everything. It's just easier if we have this very simplified, distilled version of what African fashion is or African culture is. I think it also speaks to this kind of neo-colonialism of fashion, of African fashion. So I think if there's any way that I would describe this quote-unquote African fashion, I would say that it's simply anything made on the continent. It's supporting the growth of our economy, it's supporting communities, it's celebrating talent and skill, and it's not really about a particular style. It's just simply about passion and love, and I think that's something that we have with a lot of brands, but we tend to, I think it's something that gets lost a lot when it sort of shifts towards being for a bigger market. By bigger market, I mean a Western market.
As Erica de Grief states in Creating African Fashion Histories, a domain became marked out as tribal and traditional, sharply distinguished from modernity. It was denied a changing history and an archive, and endowed instead timeless culture. Even though, for one, we know that these traditional garments do change over the time, you can look at the evolution of the Shivalani, or how wedding fashions change from year to year. And yes, some of these changes are directly linked to our interactions with colonialism, trade, or globalization, like how we've adopted shreshwear and wax prints, or even how Basutu blankets went from being animal hide to Scottish manufactured wool. And best believe there will be more on all of that in future episodes. But even then, the way we make, wear, and share these items are still the result of our own creativity, ideas, and values. And those things don't exist in a singular vacuum. In fact, you could argue that the way in which our ancestors reacted to cultural assimilation was pretty postmodern. They had to work within this enforced structure, but still find ways to assert their own values and beliefs, even if it's just through appropriating a fabric design or sticking to something from 20 years ago. So back to my initial question, where was clothing invented? There's still a lot of contentious debate about the exact origin of our species. Yes, we know it's Africa, the motherland, but whether that's East or Southern Africa is still a hot topic. But for the sake of this conversation, let's assume it's Southern Africa. And let's believe a University of Florida study that it was exactly when humans began creating the technology of clothing that they were able to migrate out of the continent. That crafting animal skin and various vegetation into coverings made moving into new and scary climates easier. Then in a way, it's important to everyone, everywhere, to have some sort of investments in a Southern African fashion history. And that's what this podcast is. For the next few episodes, I'll be reading a lot of papers and books, talking to historians, academics, designers, and practitioners about everything from beadwork and blankets to the sand in the south and the hereras in the west, to colonization and missionaries, and whatever else I can get my hands on. My name is Kintani, and this is Clothes Minded, a podcast about the world. Thank you so much for tuning in if you've made it this far. I'd also like to extend my thanks to my producer, V, who's been super patient and cool, and to Africa No Filter for lighting a fire under my ass. To everyone who's lent their voice to this episode, you're all the greatest minds of my generation, and I love you all. If you've enjoyed listening to this, consider subscribing, sharing it online, and if you're able, you can support Clothes Minded monetarily by making a donation of any amount to my Buy Me a Coffee account, which goes a long way to ensuring we can keep making more of these. If you'd like to keep up with me online, you can follow me on Instagram at OKBaddieK. And for those of you looking forward to the next episodes, here's a little bit of what's coming up.
It was interesting and strange. I often got this reaction when I said that I was interested in sound press. I often got the reaction of, you know, to study the dress of people who don't really dress, or, you know, that are almost naked, that don't really have clothing.
When I look at the media space now, I think in retrospect, a lot of the things that, and I'm not saying this for myself only, I think a lot of the things that my generation of like people in media, magazine editors were trying to do, maybe it was a bit ahead of its time.